Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're grinding out bicep curls, or muscling the couch across the living room, crushing morning miles, or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, Smoothie King has fuel to help you maximize your workouts, own your recovery, and elevate your game. Give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs with a lineup of delicious smoothies made to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.
The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Boston Red Sox fight hard, clawing back from a 5-0 deficit to ultimately win in the 11th inning by a score of 9-8. The Red Sox avoid the sweep and raise their record up to 55 wins, 49 losses. I'm Nick the Voice, joined tonight by Terry Cushman Jr. and Chris Felico, and we are the Bastards of Boston. Want more? Go to bastardsbostonbaseball.com for great written articles. Now, just before we went live, we said, man, there is a lot to talk about. Lots of game. This was not one of those 11-inning games where it's like, you know, both starters go deep, not a whole lot of offense, you know. This was just back and forth, man, and just nonstop adrenaline. I said on Twitter how, you know, my voice feels fine, but my spirit could use a rest after that. I think that the natural starting place is what started it all, which was just Giolito looking terrible. Horrible start to the game. Two big home runs given up. What did you guys think after that?
Go ahead, Chris. First here.
No, you go.
I'm a little worried about Giolito. I'm not going to lie. I mean, that's two starts in a row against pretty darn good teams. Teams that we will, I mean, we won't see these teams in the playoffs if we make it, but teams like them. He's been roughed up. I mean, I don't even know what to say at this point. Today was even worse, I think, than the Cubs game. I mean, it was like, it looked like a home run derby to start off this game. And it's weird for a game that ended with 9-8. You know, you said there was a lot of fireworks, but it came in bunches, right? Like, there was a lot of offense for the Phillies. Then they kind of got quiet. And then all of a sudden we had our, you know, six runs. There was a lot of not scoring though in between those moments. And I don't even know what to think about this team right now. I'm in between. Are we back and sell? And it's a bad place to be as a Sox fan, but I am worried about Giolito. So I'll start there, I guess.
You guys still have me?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. My computer's frozen and it's not on the streaming platform screen, but that's fine. We'll wing it. It's especially concerning since Fitz didn't really give you anything last night. And like I said last night, Hauk isn't coming back anytime soon, possibly not for the rest of the season at this point. Kyle Harrison probably will be up, but how much confidence will we have in him by the time it happens? So the need for a starting pitcher at the deadline is growing. And just imagine if Walker Buehler doesn't look good on Sunday when he makes his start against the Dodgers. So it's definitely, you know, it's definitely something to keep an eye on. Secondly, it's funny how the catchers really made or break this each game of this series. I mean, you had Narvaez with the interference walk off in game one, a little bit wonky. Had another interference type situation game two. That isn't what cost us the game. And then tonight you had JT Realmuto lose the ball in the twilight, and that got everything going. If you get the third, if you get the third out on that pop-up, the Red Sox escape the inning with a 5-0 lead. But instead, Realmuto loses it, and then the Phillies, the Red Sox put up 6 runs with 2 outs. So, and there was a lot more to be had after that. But the most pivotal moments of this series had something to do with the catchers.
Definitely. It is really funny how that works. You know, looking back at our post All-Star break tenure thus far, going back to the Cubs series, this series, I mean, we're 2/3 of the way through this National League gauntlet that, you know, we all knew was going to be so, so important. And really, this is the first game where the starting pitcher didn't really set us up for success. And funnily enough, you go back to the second worst start that our pitching staff has made in this stretch, and it was probably, definitely Lucas Giolito again on July 18th in the first game versus the Cubs. It is a little concerning because, like you said, Chris, I mean, I know that these are good offenses and good pitching staffs, and I've heard people say, oh, well, we're striking out a lot, sure, but it's against the Phillies. But if you want to go deep into the divisional series, the ALCS, eventually the World Series, you've got to face good lineups and you've got to face good rotations and you've got to face good bullpens. So I am a bit worried. We need guys to step up. If Giolito, who looked lost tonight, really, his command was not there. It wasn't even like a tipping pitch situation. It didn't seem, it was just, he didn't have them. You know, if this is going to be a pattern going forward, I mean, we just need a lot of help. Thankfully, many members of the bullpen were able to step up. I really liked Cora's decision to pull Giolito after only 50-something pitches. Yeah, 57 pitches, and go to Wilson for 2 innings. Wilson looked very good, thankfully. Hicks, a little shaky. And then I'd just love to talk to you guys and get your perspective on Chapman, because to me, I mean, when Chapman came out, I believe that was his first time going for more than 3 outs all year. And he did get them, although he did give up a game-tying home run, which I don't even blame him for. But, I mean, just a playoff atmosphere tonight, wasn't it?
Yeah, and, you know, it was interesting because Cora, now that's the second time in this series, I think he brought Chapman out in the 7th, I believe. This time it bit him. I didn't like bringing him out in that situation. I didn't like having him go out there for more than 3 batters because I think they brought him out for 4, one to end an inning, and then brought him out for the 3. I agree with you. I don't blame him for giving up the home run. I think it's the first blemish this year for him, to be honest with you. It's unfortunate when it happened. We ended up winning the game, but I didn't like a couple of Cora's decisions today, starting with that one. Back to your point, though, Terry, even when you talk about, like, Realmuto, I can't even believe that, like, none of his teammates went for that ball because he clearly just lost it and ran about 50 feet the wrong way. But, like, Harper didn't go anywhere. The pitcher is sitting there. And they were looking at the ball, which was just such an odd sight to see. And they reminded me of the Red Sox. And to be honest with you, like, yeah, we win that game, but, like, you can't count on winning games with mistakes like that because good teams are not going to be making those mistakes. You know, we were able to take advantage of it for a change, although we ended up blowing the advantage that we took multiple times, including in extra innings, but we squeaked it out. But I think still the strikeouts are a major concern for this team, especially in the quote-unquote timely hitting situations. I don't get the approach. In this series specifically, we did not draw walks unless the ball was severely off the plate. And to be honest with you, it was only in that one inning today. There were so many times where we bailed out pitchers in this series where we were up 3-0, 2-1, 3-1, and ended up striking out and just having non-competitive at-bats. And it is going to plague this team with the amount of baseball they have to play left in this season if they are going to go after a playoff spot.
With Chapman, I don't blame him either. It's only the third home run he's given up all year long. The other two were much earlier in the season, May 7th against Texas. Ironically, the Red Sox still went on to win that game. And then the other one was April 21st against the White Sox. Red Sox still went on to win the game. So Chapman has yet to give up a home run in which the Red Sox lost the game because of it. You know, as far as the team, I mean, I guess what we have to look at right now is sustainability. Right now, it's looking like two more months of the season, you know, could feel like two lifetimes. Romy broke out of his 0-for-20 streak in the most epic way possible. He did get a grand slam. I think Story is slowing down a little bit. He did have a hit tonight, though. Giolito, as we've said, I mean, it's been a while since he's had a heavy load. You know, you have to go back to 23. That was a stressful year because he wasn't pitching well at all. So, and then he only had the bracing procedure. He didn't have the full actual Tommy John. So there's still a little bit of uncertainty there. Walker Buehler as well. You know, he hasn't pitched a full season in a while. So hopefully we're not running out of gas. The bullpen kind of looks like it's running out of gas as well. So we'll see. But on the other hand, I said on one hand with the sustainability. On the other hand, that's just the kind of season we're having. You know, you can't script this season. There's been massive swings here, positively and negatively. So I don't know what the path is going to be. Maybe tonight's win kind of turns it around. You're catching the Dodgers at the right time. I think the pitching matchups are mostly favorable for us. So we'll see. And then you have the Twins right after, who have kind of heated up, but you would think are probably going to be sellers here towards the end of next week. So we'll see.
Definitely. And I'm looking forward to diving into those pitching matchups with the Dodgers a little later on in the show. But right now, though, I think, you know, the word that you mentioned that really sticks out is sustainability. I think that's a great word for it, because tonight's win, as gutsy as it was, and as many guys did step up in big moments, it really does feel like that fifth inning, those six runs, they were handed to us in a lot of ways. You had the Phillies pitcher, Lizardo, who's having a decent year. I mean, that guy looked like a completely different man in the fifth inning. He could not locate anything. I mean, I swear, you put Connor Wong up there, he probably walks. You put me up there, I probably walk. It really was that ugly. You know, if you go back and you look at his pitches, I mean, Yoshida led off with a beautiful double, but then Sedan Rafaela, four pitches way off the plate. Marcelo Meyer, just way off the plate. Then to walk in back-to-back runs, especially with Jaron Duran, who, may I ask, why was he batting second tonight? That was the real baffling decision for me. This is a guy who struggles versus left-handed pitching. I don't hate necessarily having him in the lineup. I get it, especially if you want to play Sedan in at second base for whatever reason. But to put him in the second spot, it really led to him coming up to the bat in big situations often, really. And more often than not, he choked in them. You know, thankfully he did take that walk. But again, you look at the pitches. I mean, they were two of them very outside, two close ones. And maybe that's a good time for me to mention the strike zone tonight, which seemed a little wonky. I'm looking forward to seeing the sort of ump report card that the guy on Twitter does, because it felt like for both teams, I mean, there were some real weird charity calls, sometimes benefiting the pitchers, sometimes benefiting the hitters. But, you know, then Romy Gonzalez comes up and does exactly as the great Charlie Smith, some are calling him the Babe Ruth, baseball Twitter. I mean, he called it in the group chat. He said, could you imagine if Romy gets a hold of one right here to break out of his slump? And sure enough, he did. It really does feel like if Lizardo kept his stuff, didn't completely melt down, even if he gives up two walks and just doesn't keep walking runs in to get to the lefty killer. I mean, this game probably doesn't even make it to extras, I'm sorry to say. And of course, it's very easy, you know, some great analysis I'm delivering, which is, you know, if we didn't win, we would have lost. But it's very true that you can't help but look at that inning and say, man, did we escape a mess? Their guy was worse than ours.
Yeah, the great Charlie Smith, he's 2 for 2. So he's batting 1,000 in those situations, by the way. So he's certainly the Babe Ruth of Twitter baseball. But as far as with the Sox this series, I think Mark was talking about it the other day that I think the MLB average for team strikeouts is 8 per game. We had another extra inning game in which the Phillies managed to either be at the average or below. I think the other time they were at 8, which is the average, they were at 7 tonight. And the Sox were exactly the same spot, 16. So double the league average. It's alarming at this point. But, you know, you both had a lot of good points. Terry, to your point as far as sustainability, the Sox at this point, every time I say this isn't sustainable, they're going to go out there and win 10 games. You know, and then we're sitting there like, oh, wow, this is amazing. And then we lose 4 out of 6. And it's like, oh, we're right back in the same spot. I really feel like this season is going to end where are we on a winning streak or a losing streak? And that's going to determine do we make the playoffs. And then, you know, the good thing about the playoffs is it's not a full season. So if you're on a hot streak or if you happen to hit a hot streak and you make the playoffs, you could have a 2021 situation all over again. But as we remember 2021, we started off really hot. We got to that Rays series, looked pretty good in the beginning of that Astros series, a blown call in that Native Aldi game, and then the wheels fell off and nothing ever came back together. And it feels like our season's going to end that way. Whether it's in the playoffs or not remains to be seen.
There's just a lot of mixed emotions after tonight. And, you know, I didn't know how you two were going to feel before we got in here and hit go, you know, and for the listening audience, we're in the war room. We're reacting to stuff and, you know, we only meet on here for maybe 3 minutes before we hit go. So we don't really know how the show will go. And, I guess we're pretty, you know, we're looking at the future with a lot of caution right now, I think is the safe way to put it. You know, Eric Cohen in the stream, another 16 strikeout game. Randy Clemens, probably one of our most faithful listeners, says, the best way I can describe the Red Sox season is the same way I can describe my ex-wife. Mercurial. I don't know what that means. Oh, okay. Well, Nick knows what it means. But, so I just, it's a good win, and we're going to have a full day here to reset as we come back to Boston. Another, I don't know if this is an ominous development, but I don't know if you guys are checking your Twitter. Marcelo Meyer left the game. He does have a splint on his wrist.
Oh, God.
He's a guy that doesn't seem to get through a season healthy. You notice there was no talk this winter of extending Marcelo Meyer, and there still really isn't. I'm surprised we're not talking about it with Roman Anthony right now, because he's off to a good start. Randy just tipped his ball cap to us. But so I don't know. There's just so much in flux right now. Like, even Bregman isn't healthy right now. We've been watching him run the bases. So, and another point I'll make that I often make The Red Sox have never been a second half team. All the years we made the postseason, we've essentially led the division all the way through. And so this will be the first time, if it happens, that, you know, we surged in the second half.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see. You know, as far as, like, my vibe goes after this win, I mean, it's electric in a vacuum, right? I honestly think that this game might go down as one of the best of the season, you know, for the Red Sox. It was just unbelievable and had that playoff atmosphere. But it does really go to show, not just this game, but really the two series post All-Star break going up against real postseason teams. It goes to show the holes that are in this roster. A real problem that I've had, at looking at that Cubs series and looking at that Phillies series, is that it doesn't really matter how good your starting rotation is. And it doesn't really matter how good your bullpen is if your offense isn't scoring runs. And tonight, thanks in part to Lizardo, we did score a lot of runs, but the past five nights we haven't. You know, you look at one run, zero, then six, then two, then one, then nine. It's very temperamental, you know? So it's in flux. We really need to figure out, is a first baseman like O'Hearn or Naylor or even a guy like Yandy, is that enough to tip the scales and make this offense electric? Because I see 16 strikeouts tonight. I see another night of 3-for-13 with runners in scoring position, which has seemed to be the story of the Red Sox all year. And I'm really concerned that the talent is there, but the approach is wrong. It really does feel like we just approach these at-bats with an incorrect mindset. And I'm not entirely sure how you can fix something like that midseason.
Well, Jason, Chris, and Mark really attacked that the other night. And, you know, so that's number one. Number two, you still have to do something. Will it be enough? Nobody knows. But as wonky as this season's been, this team deserves the best possible chance to make a run at it. And Breslow needs to make that happen.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to lie. If they didn't win this game, I was starting to get closer to a point where I was like, you know what? Wouldn't even blame the front office. Let them die at this point. And I hate to say it that way, but it was another start to a second half of the season where you had everything in front of you and you gave the front office every reason to say, let's not make any investment in this team. And that goes from coaches, players, managers, everyone that was involved. But then, of course, they win. It's, you know, you both have said it, especially you, Terry. It's like, it's this win is a microcosm of their season. You have like the worst of losses, these historic type wins, and the ebbs and flows, the highs and lows, and this roller coaster ride that is the 2025 Boston Red Sox. They're alive. And I guess until they're dead, yeah. I mean, more nights than not, they give you a reason to think that there's something to invest in. There's something worth it. But then they have these streaks, both hot and cold, where one week we're World Series contenders. Not saying we've said that, but the media. But then there's other weeks where, you know, or days where it's like, I'm not even going to lie. I was at the point, it's like, sell. I don't even care. If you lose today, just sell.
Whatever happens, I just want it to be decisive. You know, that's been my stance really for a long time now, where I can't have another one of these treadwater deadlines. I don't want another 80-win season or 85-win season and you miss the wild card. If we're going to believe in this team, if we're going to play hard, and I mean, these next six games are going to be huge, you know? If we can catch the Dodgers at a good time, and we can do to the Twins what a playoff-caliber team should be able to do to the Twins, then, I mean, you really have to make a choice. If this team is worth believing in, then you add pieces to it, you push your chips in, and you take a swing at the postseason. if this is a team that just doesn't have what it takes to go in this year, then I'm sorry to say it, but you should really look at trading Giolito and Chapman and just seeing what we can get to help us next year, the year after that, because ultimately the Sox are in a place where the young core is here. You have a guy like Crochet who's just been locked up. Hopefully we can get a deal done with Bregman. And you have Meyer, maybe Campbell will make a reappearance, so on and so forth. I see the password's doing great down in AAA. He keeps getting better. So I just want to make sure that whatever we do this year, we have next year in mind. You know, don't overpay, I guess. I know that that's a concern with the Red Sox, but at the same time, if you're not going to overpay, you may as well just wave a white flag, because if you leave the team as it is right now, I don't think it's good enough. I really don't.
So another update on Marcelo Meyer. This comes from Rob Bradford of WEEI. He felt the wrist issue in his second at bat. He expects to get an MRI. Apparently he had a wrist issue in 2022, but he doesn't really remember it very well, so he doesn't know if whatever's going on tonight is comparable to then. Here's the bad news. I mean, if he does go on the injured list, you're probably getting David Hamilton back, which is not what we want. You could call up Christian Campbell, but I think the second base experiment is over as far as Campbell goes. So I don't really know what happens there, but you could definitely do a Romy Hamilton platoon. That doesn't sound sexy, but I don't think we're getting a middle infielder either way. Really, the best case scenario is that he just misses a few games, comes back, and that's the end of that. You guys mentioned the password. You know, we're in mock trade season. You know, we go through it all winter long. Now we're going through the July version of it. He's untouchable to me. I am not trading the password under any circumstances right now.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, he's a really interesting player. And what's really fun, did you see that he has a, I think, a younger brother, a level below him, that they're calling the username now, which is so funny. Johan Fran Garcia, that is. And I believe if I just pull up his stats super quick, yeah, he's playing in high A right now this year, and he's starting to put it together after missing the first couple months, I read. So that's just a lot of fun. I really do love the password. I think he slots into this team nicely going forward, whether it's next year or 2 years from now. That is a guy that I'd rather not deal away. I'm not too concerned, I guess, with urgency regarding certain things. Like, obviously, if a Joe Ryan type guy becomes available, then I start to maybe reconsider some of my untouchables. But I mean, I agree. The tough thing, as Jules just pointed out in the comments, is absolutely correct. The tough thing is that this is a seller's market without question. And we've been seeing that, you know, that trend increasing. This is going to be ugly. I don't even want to know if Eugenio Suarez does end up getting dealt, which I assume he will. I don't even want to know what he's going to get. You know, I talked about the Yusei Kikuchi thing. Last year, he got three different players. Two of them are currently on the Blue Jays roster. And I think tonight, actually, one induced an error on Ben Rice, funnily enough, with a hit in order to, you know, put the Blue Jays ahead. So it is interesting. I mean, three players for half a season of a starting pitcher. That was last year. This year, who knows? You get half a season of Eugenio. You get half a season of anyone, really. It's not like it used to be. It's not, okay, we'll give you a couple players to be named later. All right, we'll give you a couple 21-year-olds down in A-ball. It really does seem like teams are getting greedy, quite frankly. But, I mean, that's fair enough. I mean, if you have a buyer who's willing to give you what you want, I can't blame you for it, you know? And that's why I almost am leaning towards, if we're not going to buy, I sort of want us to sell, you know? I hate to say it, especially after a win, but just make it decisive, please. I can't say it enough.
I don't think Breslow can sell and keep his job. I don't think that can happen. I think he has to buy. I genuinely believe it's a daily thing in the war room to question John Henry's motives. We all do it. We all stand in different spots. I think John Henry wants to win. And so I expect them to still be buyers at the deadline. But I mentioned something in the war room the other day. Ben Sherrington is available and he would come back. I think he would come back where he doesn't have Larry Lucchino, Bill James forcing his hand on certain things. That would solve the problem of, you know, not having to go the route with uncertainty on whether the people we approach even would want the job, especially blowing through another guy after a couple of years. I don't know what would happen, honestly, but if Breslow does get moved on from, it's primarily going to be because he's not very well liked behind the scenes by other executives. You haven't heard anything from Sam Kennedy outside of the Devers trade, which he had to do. I mean, he had to be front and center for that. So that's something to watch as we go forward here. I don't think it's going to be Sherrington, but he's one plug and play guy where they don't have to do anything else drastic in the front office. And we can laugh all we want, but he was never going to have the support of Pittsburgh, you know, in terms of spending. Always going to be in tough spots with his, you know, pending free agents. Skeens won't get traded, but he will eventually in, you know, maybe a couple more summers. But there's just so much uncertainty with this season and what will happen as a result of the season.
Man, I got like 9 points I got to address here now.
Sorry.
Go all the way back to second base with Marcelo Meyer. If he's out, I think what we didn't consider too is that, and I was reading that Seydon Rafaela might be in play to be there for an extended period of time, which also frees up the ability to now have some of those guys in the outfield that we're mixing and matching be a little bit more permanent stay, especially if Marcel is out for quite some time, possibly the rest of the year, because I do remember that injury in 2022 when he was in, I believe it was Double-A at the time. And to your point, Terry, he never finishes the season. So that's one thing. As far as the password, to me, there's no prospect that's untradeable. It's what's the trade, you know? And again, I'm not saying this is like the case. If I'm getting Fernando Tatis Jr., I'm driving him to the airport myself. I don't care.
Fair enough.
I would trade Roman Anthony at this point for a Tatis. Just being. Oh,
I wouldn't do that.
I wouldn't personally.
That's fine. I'm not big on prospects. I never have been. I'd be worse than Dombrowski if I was running the Red Sox, but to me, like, a sure thing is better than hope, because there's been too much hope the last 5 years with this team past that point. I can't even remember all the points now I have to address. What was the last thing you just said, Terry?
I was talking about Breslow and...
That's probably why I wanted to forget. So, Sherrington, I don't want him. I wouldn't want him. He didn't get the spending support in Pittsburgh. I don't think anyone would, but is he going to get it here? Because we don't even know if we're really willing to spend. We say it, but we don't actually do it. So I don't even know if that would be the right thing for him. And if we're going to go backwards, I don't know if Charrington's the place I'm placing my cap, if I'm going backwards in the annals of Red Sox history with GMs. I mean, yes, 2013 was nice, but but he didn't do much winning when we were much more flexible in spending. And I don't know why, but I feel the opposite with Breslow. If he goes and full-blown sells, I almost feel like there's something going on behind the scenes where he has approval that he's coming back. You see that all the time with GMs, that when they go in full sell mode, there's conversations behind closed doors where it's like, hey, we have your back. Now, it also the Red Sox, they might tell him that and then stab him in the back. That would be 100% possible. But because I feel like Chaim Bloom, if he would have, even the last year he was here, if he would have went full sell mode and just got us a ton of assets, I don't think we would have fired him. I think the problem with Chaim Bloom was he didn't know what he was doing. He never wanted to buy. He didn't really want to sell. And he always kind of sat in the middle and did a little bit of both. And not much of it ever worked out, with the exception of the Vasquez trade. I think if Breslow goes one way or the other, it's hard for me to see that he's not going to have the support. Now, all that can change, because who knows? There could be a big fish that comes on the market. There could be things that happen the second half of the season that we don't know, that are unforeseen. Charrington's not shocking. I think the Nationals, you know, GM was a little bit shocking. We've already said we don't want him, but there could be something else out there that happens the second half of the season where the Red Sox maybe go, huh, you know, we kind of like Breslow, but like, how do we pass up on that? Now, whether we can actually convince that person to come here remains to be seen. I don't know. That's kind of where I'm at.
Yeah, I think in regards to the whole idea of Charrington, it is like a very monkey's paw type of situation, I think, where we think of Dombrowski and we think of Theo and we're like, man, I really wish that we could get an old GM like we used to have. And then the monkey's paw, you know, curls and we get Ben Charrington. I do think that would be, I wouldn't necessarily be happy with that switch. But I agree with what you said, Chris, that if we do end up selling, I think that that's a sign that Breslow does have support. You know, whether he has that support, we don't know. We I would love to be a fly on the wall, or even, you know, a voice in the head about, you know, does this guy feel comfortable right now? Does this guy feel like he can stay put and, you know, not have someone looking over his shoulder? Or does he feel like he's sweating, like the walls are closing in? That's going to influence his decision-making, unfortunately. No human being is going to be 100% logical. They're going to be thinking of themselves in a situation like that. I agree with Chaim. You know, imagine if the same year that we traded Vasquez, imagine if he had that type of return for guys like JD, guys like Eovaldi, guys like Xander. Just the wasted opportunities that we had. And that's exactly why I would much prefer to see a full sell than another teeter-totter, you know, type of thing where, oh, we'll get a middle-class reliever, we'll get a backup catcher, we'll get, you know, like, I don't want anyone to throw us a bone as a fan base. You either go in or you go out, you know? No one gets celebrated for going 81 at the end of the day. You look at us back in 2012, we were awful. 2013, we won it all. You go back to 2015, somewhere around there, I think we had a pretty bad year. Then we had a pretty good stretch that led up to a World Series. I can handle a losing season if it means you're setting us up for success next year. Guaranteed success next year, as guaranteed as anything in sports can be.
Well, let's look at it this way. I don't see a scenario in which we sell. I really don't. And if the Dodgers series goes the way I think it will, us winning 2 out of 3, the Twins series right after that, probably the same thing, 2 out of 3. You're buyers at that point, because the deadline's right after the Twins series on Thursday. So you are buyers. And I just, so Breslow has to buy here. He's got a lot of problems to try to resolve. I don't know if he's going to do it adequately here. And I'm just really pessimistic about his future. And when you talk about, when you kick around names to potentially replace him with, I've mentioned fairly recently, ironically, when Ben Charrington was I guess, fired. They had their guy. They didn't have to advertise it. Dombrowski was their guy, and they went and got him. Now, we don't know if that guy exists, but that would almost be how they need to approach it versus moving on from Breslow, advertising it again, probably not getting a ton of interest. And, you know, we'll see. One thing, I don't remember if I mentioned this privately. Sherrington was Epstein's right-hand man. He was the number two. He was the farm director, essentially the guy who drafted Mookie Betts. Eddie Romero does the international stuff, but that's where Bogarts came in. So a lot of good farm system things happened with Sherrington running it. When he became the top executive in that front office, the drafting and, you know, acquiring young players took a major nosedive when Sherrington went out of that role. So that's probably the biggest black mark on Sherrington's whole run here, was how poorly we drafted. And you look at all those guys Dombrowski traded, none of them panned out. There's not one guy that you look back at. Even Moncada, you know, failed epically to live up to the hype. Even though he was adequate at, you know, the MLB level, I mean, he was a 6-to-8-hole hitter, you know, for the majority of his career. He's still playing somewhere. I want to say it's Anaheim. Don't quote me. So, you know, that was kind of the blemish, but the familiarity factor there with, like, who does Epstein prefer if he could influence a decision? I don't know, but it's in the back of my mind.
It's a good question, and it's worth thinking about. You know, as the dust sort of settles on the day, the Red Sox do currently own a wild card position. You know, the Rays and the Rangers are both 1.5 games back in the wild card race. The Mariners and the Red Sox are tied, only 2 games behind the Yankees for the top wild card spot. It's interesting. It's a really interesting position. It's getting more interesting, quite frankly, as the season goes on. As a neutral observer, it's like, oh, I can't wait. As a Red Sox fan, it's giving me agita. You know, it is going to be just a very important couple of days. And I agree, like, even though as much as I would love to be able to say, oh man, what would Chapman get us? What would Giolito? I agree. I mean, how do we sell on a team like this? It's hard. It's hard to make that unless we go out there over the next 6 games and get embarrassed, which could happen. I'm not rooting for it, certainly, but it could happen. It's just tough. You know, 3 guys that I would like to mention real fast too. Maybe working up, that Greg Weissert blown save was the most predictable thing I've ever seen. And, you know, technically it's not an earned run. He has not given up an earned run going all the way back to July 2nd was the last time he had a meltdown that induced that. Of course, we all know that, just a few days ago, really in Chicago, he had a terrible outing. He's had some control issues this month, but funnily enough, it is, you know, even despite those bad outings, he is on like a 6-game no earned run streak for whatever that's worth. But tonight that was tough to watch. Jorge Alcala, meanwhile, so far with the Red Sox this season, I believe it's 14 games, 13 innings, and a 0.69 ERA. I sort of, you know, turned my nose up at that acquisition, but so far he looks to be a pretty solid piece of middle relief for us. And then a very bold decision to take him out for the last hitter and go to Bernardino trying to play matchups, which ended up being very electric, and Bernardino did exactly what he needed to do. I believe he threw 6 strikes in the final at bat to score a strikeout. just again, when I mentioned the playoff atmosphere tonight earlier, it definitely felt like playoff atmosphere. And another thing about Bernardino, who just looked absolutely cooked last month, this month you have 7 appearances, 10.1 innings pitched, 3 hits, 3 walks, 9 strikeouts, no runs is his line for July so far. So if Bernie could go back to being what he is and we could just give these guys a rest, I feel like the bullpen pieces are pretty good.
Yeah, the bullpen pieces, I mean, they can be a problem, right? When we have games like we did the last 6 where our starters aren't, you know, they're going 5-6 innings and you're seeing Craig Weishart have to come in, Bernardino, Jordan Hicks, Chapman coming in the 7th, you know, overextending Whitlock. Yeah, we're going to have some rough moments and patches in a game or in a series. I think ideally, if we can get to a place where we're consistently only having to see a Whitlock, a Chapman, Jordan Hicks here and there, a Weishart here and there, a Bernardino here and there, but consistently getting it to Whitlock and Chapman to close out games, and we can get some length out of our starters, yeah, then our bullpen's actually probably one of the strong points of this team right now, and is probably not one of the biggest needs at the deadline, especially not knowing what's going to happen with Marcelo Meyer, although I don't think we're going to be able to address that. But yeah, I think the thing, you guys seem pretty confident. I'll ask, well, at least I shake Terry. You think we're going to take 2 or 3 from the Dodgers, right? Like, that's your prediction?
I would say so. I mean, you have Crochet going in the first game, and then you're going to be avoiding Yamamoto, Glasnow. So I think those all play into our favor. Dustin May hasn't looked particularly great. I know he's going Sunday against Buehler. I guess that's a total flip of the coin type game, which everyone has their lunch handed to him, as Dennis Eckersley would say. He'll basically decide that game. And I forget who's pitching for them in the middle game, but it's definitely not their best guys. They're traveling east. You know, we haven't, yeah, going west didn't hurt us.
Matchups, by the way, when we do get into that, I do have those up.
Well, okay. So high level question, and forget about the. So in these next 2 series, let's say we do what we just did and we go 2-4. Do you think that changes? Like, are we still full buyer mode?
If we go 2-4, so
you essentially will have gone 4-8 out of 12.
Yeah, I mean, that puts us 4 games above 500, ironically, about right exactly where we've been the last couple of years. I don't see any scenario where we sell. I just don't. I think Breslow's ass is on the line. I really believe that. So I don't know how he addresses it. Obviously, Suarez is the guy most of us want, but I don't know. I don't know what would be enough. I don't know what would be adequate at the deadline. That's where I'm so conflicted right now. How do you adequately address the needs that we have? We discussed in the open of this show the pessimism we have between Giolito, Fitz, and possibly Buehler. Buehler's start on Sunday will really determine what we do for starting pitching here as Thursday gets closer.
Yeah, I think that's very true. Like, if Walker Buehler, we sort of got him coming off a bad season where right at the end, he lit up, right? He seemingly recovered from that injury and he was good in the postseason. And so we were like, all right, we have a guy who can pitch in the second half. If Walker Buehler really can pitch in the second half, if he turns his season around midway, which, I mean, we've certainly seen before. I forget if it was a year or two ago, but I believe Brian Bayo started out really bad, and or maybe not really bad, but he had a really good like end of the season. I forget what year that was. It's going to be interesting. I do think that, you know, what I would love to see is what is the asking price, or more so, what is the offer, right, for a guy like Chapman? If a team comes to us, if a team like the Dodgers, who I heard their bullpen is really struggling lately, I think they're pretty banged up. If they come to us and they offer us a lion's share for Chapman, it's going to be hard to say no to that. But also, if you want to go in on this season, you can't really trade Chapman. I mean, the dude is putting together one of the best seasons of relief of the modern era, quite frankly. It's just going to be interesting. I don't disagree with your logic either, Terry. Like, I do agree that Breslow is likely feeling the pressure, likely in a hot seat. I'm never going to say never to selling. And logically, I can see outcomes where selling is the right option. But it is going to be interesting to see if Breslow decides to go with that option. Because ultimately, I mean, a lot of these guys don't really look too far past their nose when it comes to looking at timelines. They say, well, why do I care, you know, if the Red Sox win 2 or 3 years from now if I'm not the GM? You know, a lot of people might think like that, unfortunately.
What scared me is there was articles today, even before the game, where they were reporting that, like, we're not speculating we're going to make a big trade. And, like, when we traded Devers, all we heard was, we got all this money now. We could make moves at the deadline. We could take on big contracts. Now, we figured that more than likely it was going to be in the offseason, but we still have the flexibility. And the fact that they're already saying that, and it just so happens that it looked like we were going to possibly get swept the series, at best take 2 out of 6, like, that has me worried that they're not really committed to buying.
Yeah, it's tough. I did see that article, and when you just brought it up, my knee-jerk reaction in my own head was something that I can't say aloud because it would probably get us demonetized. It does sort of feel like they're setting the table, you know? They're sort of setting expectations and saying, all right, you guys aren't getting something crazy. Temper that, you know? And that sucks. It really does.
We need something, somebody that's controllable. You know, we need the deadline that we haven't had in
ever
several years.
Really going back to 21, I would say.
That was a rental. I don't know. This is it's a weird time in history. I don't know. I don't know where to really go with this, but we need to win, and or we need to sell. And I think the fact that we probably won't sell is just an ugly consequence of the last few years. If you went for it and you tried, perhaps maybe we would have inched into a postseason. But we haven't, so we're kind of handcuffed. I mean, this franchise needs a narrative-changing deadline, and I don't know. Some of that is potentially within your control, but a lot of it isn't. You can't control the market.
I feel like of all the names that we're attached to, outside of Joe Ryan, I don't think there's a player that we are directly linked to. I'm like, oh, wow, that's going to really get us going. If the Sox are going to make a move that's going to have an impact, it's got to be a player that none of us have considered, right? It's got to be like that Tatis move where it's like, wow, I did not see that coming. Who the hell made this phone call in the middle of the night and made this happen? You know, like I just saw Jules saying like a name like Ketel Marte. That would completely be out of left field. Now, I'm not saying that's going to happen, but like names like that where it's none of us are expecting it and it's like an in the shadows type of deal that just gets announced, like that's what the Sox need so desperately and badly. Do I think it's going to happen? No, but if something has to happen, that's what we need.
Yeah.
You want to know another interesting guy that could take the job? Mike Hazen. You go back 2 years ago, that team was positioned a lot better than it is now. And it's not in a bad spot. They're not looking at a super long-term rebuild. They can flip some assets here and, you know, start competing. But I don't know. I wonder if that's a name to watch here, as if he just goes full on sell. And if you're the Diamondbacks, I don't know. I'd never considered Marte until Chris brought him up just now, but I don't know what he's got left on his deal. But, you know, Suarez is a free agent. Zach Gallen is a free agent after the year. So is Merrill Kelly. Lourdes Gurriel, I think, might have one more year left at like $14 million. I mean, I don't think anyone's going to really go hard after him, but he is a movable asset. So who's to say he doesn't clean house with all the short-term guys? And then maybe, I don't know. I think Arizona loves him though, so he's not under any pressure. So that maybe that's how we talked me out of Mike Hazen, but yeah.
Yeah, that's my real only hang up with him. I mean, he's done a great job over in Arizona, but I feel like he's done such a great job that he's earned a lot of goodwill probably from ownership, I would have to imagine. It is interesting though, because he sort of came up with the Red Sox in the Sox system, you know? I completely forgot that. I just looked him up when you mentioned the name just to be like, oh yeah, where did he get his start? And sure enough, you know, it's really interesting to see that he spent a substantial amount of time working under many, many different Sox GMs. So, I mean, that would be a lovely acquisition. Certainly. I would love something like that, but it does kind of feel like that one's almost too good to be true, you know?
Yeah, I mean, he was the guy they wanted the most, and I don't blame him for wanting to stay. I mean, he spent all that time building that team, and it seemed like it was on the precipice. They did. That was their World Series year, too, 2023.
Well, that's what I was going to say, Terry. It's an interesting one because, well, first of all, did we even request an interview with him, and he declined us, correct, in the last search?
I believe. I don't know what the exact scenario was.
But you know what? Regardless, that's a team that went to the World Series. They had a little bit of a miracle type run to get there. No one expected it. But it's one of those scenarios where it's a flip of a coin, because I could just as easily see a front office go, oh, wow, like we got here. I thought we were going to turn the corner and start to build off of that. And here we are rebuilding again. You only get to do that so many times, where you get to the precipice of a championship and then you pull the trigger on rebuilding. So, I mean, it just as easily could be they're like, hey, listen, thanks, but, you know, we're going to go in a different direction. We thought we were going to get over the hill, and here we are, you know, getting back to the bottom, getting ready to reclimb again.
All right, here's some cold water for you. So let me get the date on this. Okay, right after the World Series in 2023, Hazen got an extension through the 2028 season plus a club option for 2029. So yeah,
that's quite a commitment.
That talks me out of it. I mean, the realistic possibility is what it talks me out of.
Yeah, you know, I mean, honestly, too, this deadline, I mean, I don't expect Brez to necessarily come out and surprise us with anything crazy, you know, but I guess he still could, you know. It's a Schrodinger's cat situation where the box right now remains unopened on the deadline. And, you know, in a week's time, pretty much, we're going to open up that box and see exactly what he has in store for us. And it could be something very good, could be something very disappointing. It'll be interesting, though, regardless. But, yeah, I mean, it's just, God, like I said earlier, I really would love to be like a fly on the wall and hear just his inner monologue right now.
And don't forget, the Blue Jays are going to add. The Rays most likely will add to some degree. Jerry DePoto in Seattle is on the hot seat. And this is just the American League side.
I would imagine Texas is looking to add too. They've been doing pretty well so far.
Yeah, they're on an upswing.
The Yankees will add too.
Just yeah, call it what it is. With their 29th ranked farm or whatever it is.
It's really, I saw recently that Spencer Jones, who's like one of their top prospects, if not their top, I hear that he's been taking like huge steps forward this season. And so, you know, a lot of Yankees fans are like, we want to add, but please don't touch our one guy. You know, don't touch this guy. You can take all the rest. Just this one, please.
Brian Cashman needed to be fired like 9 years ago.
Yeah.
But he's going to keep running that thing into the ground. Yeah, I don't know. We can kick it around all night long, but it's just so open to interpretation. I just don't know what the market's really going to be with all these teams buying. And I think Suarez won't probably go until deadline day, probably that afternoon. So I don't think he's going to get the haul that many people expect, but I don't know.
Yeah. Oh, and yeah, George White just mentioned in chat. Yeah, I see this news breaking relatively recently that Taj Bradley was actually just optioned to AAA, interestingly enough. 20 starts for him. I mean, not a great season, certainly, but doesn't look that bad under the hood. It looks like his strikeouts have come down this year. I mean, I wouldn't mind getting a guy like that, certainly, but I'm not sure if he necessarily sends us over the hump this year, you know? That would definitely be more like a guy who would help reinforce this rotation the next three, in my mind. With that, do you guys have any other closing thoughts, or should we just jump into the probable pitching matchups? Take a look at what the Dodgers have for us.
Yeah, let's do that.
So, Friday's game, July 25th. Thank goodness we get a day off, by the way, tomorrow. Because I feel like everyone in the pen almost pitched, I'm pretty sure. If not everyone, I'm not even sure. It was really one of those games. So, Friday, 7:10 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, you have Emmett Sheehan versus Brian Baio. Saturday at 7:15 p.m., you have Clayton Kershaw versus Garrett Crochet. And then Sunday, a 1:35 p.m. start with Dustin May versus Walker Buehler. It's going to be very, very interesting. Emmett Sheehan, I'm looking here. This is going to be his fourth start of the season. He pitched for the Dodgers, made his debut back in 2023. I guess spent all of last year. I'm not sure if it was in the minors or if he was injured. I can just pull that up quickly. Looks like he missed all of last year. So coming off an injury probably. So far in his 16.1 innings, he has been okay, a 4.41 ERA, some decent numbers under the hood, but he's kind of like one of those mystery box pitchers where you haven't really seen enough of him to know who he is yet, you know? Clayton Kershaw, who just recently broke a big milestone, right, for strikeouts? That's going to be interesting. He's putting up good numbers this year, 3.27 ERA in 11 starts. You look under the hood, hard hit percentage is suspect. He's not really striking out guys this year. He might have broken that milestone, but he only has 37 strikeouts in 55 innings so far this year. Versus Crochet, I mean, that's one that I feel fairly comfortable with. And then for the Buehler-May game, I mean, May looks pretty ugly this year. 17 starts. He has 99 innings pitched over 18 games, a 4.73 ERA. And I mean, again, you look at the metrics, he's walking a lot of guys. He's not getting that many strikeouts, not really getting guys to chase pitch, giving up hard contact. You say, okay, well, is he figuring something out recently? You look at his last seven games. No. So I'm gonna be a little crazy here. Well, maybe not too crazy. As much as I would love to predict a Red Sox sweep and really go wild with it, I think that we take 2 out of 3 here. I think we're catching the Dodgers at the right time. I think that they're 7-11, I believe, in July. only have 2 wins and 4 losses since the All-Star break. So their bullpen's kind of banged up. I think we'd take 2 out of 3 here. That'll be my final verdict. What do you guys think?
I would agree with that. I thought tomorrow was the Crochet game, but as usual, I am incorrect. You pointed out the metrics with Kershaw. Kershaw is basically in the Rich Hill stage of his career now, you know, just finding ways to stay relevant and doing at least a decent job at that. But, you know, it's going to be a lot of off-speed stuff, so I don't know. I would assume Romy's going to be in there, especially, I guess, if Meyer is not. But I don't know which game to give the Red Sox here. You can make a case that we sweep, but I think we're all being realistic here. And that is a lineup. I mean, if Ohtani gets you a couple of times in a game, they can hurt you a number of different ways. So I'll say 2 out of 3, but I'll cop out and say I don't know which one it's going to be. Which game will take the L?
You know, I'd like to say that we're getting the Dodgers at the right time, but I mean, you can make the argument we got the Phillies at the right time. I think they lost 6 and 9 prior to playing us. I also feel like I don't remember the last time the Sox beat the Dodgers. On paper, it's favorable. Like, would it shock me if we won 2 or 3 or swept? No, especially with the ebbs and flows. But my heart tells me we're probably only going to win one of these games. It'll be the Crochet game. And if we got swept, I wouldn't be shocked. Like, that's how I feel about the Sox at this point. You just don't know what you're going to get. We could be on a heater when we get in that series. We could still be on this. We don't really know where we're at, right? And we win one, lose one, or just go on a losing streak. So I hope I'm wrong. I do want to point out that Kyle Teal, thank you for helping the White Sox beat the Rays today so we can keep our position. He went 4 for 5. First home run. So,
yeah. And you know what? That just reminded me. I don't even think we gave a shout out to Narvaez for that beautiful laser beam home run that really won us the game. I think we completely glossed over that, funnily enough. Thank God for that. You know, going into that inning, I was like, we can't just get one run here. We need 2 runs, all right? Just with the ghost runner and how good the Phillies are. I think you're very fair, Chris. Like, I think any amount of pessimism right now is warranted. You know, I can't blame you for that. One little bitter pill that I did want to point out before we sign off is that the Cubs, who obviously were able to kind of shut us down offensively, you know, a 4-1 loss, a 6-0 loss, than a 6-1 win for us. They did get banged up and just drop a series to the Royals, where the Royals scored 12 runs in one game and 8 in another. So I saw that and I couldn't help but roll my eyes and laugh, because that really is just like a, God, the Royals offense is going to outgun us? Okay, that's pretty rough.
We're getting swept. I've changed my mind.
Yeah. Thank you, everyone, for joining us. Really great show tonight. Really great game tonight. Probably, again, one of those little historical ones, just if you look back on the whole season, especially if we do end up getting to the playoffs tonight, will be a night to remember. Really appreciate everyone for sticking around, for watching, for listening, for commenting. And until next time, everyone enjoy the day off. But the Bastards won't have a day off. They'll be live tomorrow, presumably with some hot takes. Right, Terry?
Yeah, Jeremy and Charlie will be up to their normal mischief, so be plenty to talk about. Hopefully we'll have a Marcelo Meyer development. I suspect we won't until Friday, but we'll see, and maybe some other stuff will be going on throughout the league that'll have some sort of implications.
Definitely, so it'll be interesting to see. So I've been Nick, joined by Terry and Chris. We have been the Bastards. Thank you so much. Take care.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. TNCs apply. Available in app only.